Blog Talk Radio.
When the opponent expands, I contract. When he contracts, I expand. And when there is an opportunity, I do not hit. It hits all by itself.
Now, you must remember, the enemy has only images and illusions behind which he hides his true motives. Destroy the image, and he will break the enemy.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
No, it's Max, Darryl, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
Good evening, folks. Once again, this is the Grindhouse edition of Afro-Nerd Radio. I'm your host, D-Bert, a.k.a. The Afro-Nerd, and I have some colleagues in attendance as well, folks. The call-in number, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Before we get into the discourse, this time a pulp-flavored discourse, we've got to get into a nerdcore groove. This is Omega Man Hip Drop. Omega Man Hip Drop. We'll be back. Let's groove. And then, of course, pulp-flavored discourse. Hold on. That was Omega Man Hip Drop. This is the Grindhouse, the comic shop, coming up first, and of course, Afro-Nerd Radio coming up second at 7 p.m. The number, 646-915-9620, if you dare, you can call in and join in with the festivities. First up, of course, is the captain, Captain James Tiberius Kirk. You are needed on the bridge post haste. Let's get to it.
Let's go.
All right, and then, of course, there is the incredible Daryl B. Let's get to it.
Who would ever think that I would live long enough to see Andre Brower as a straight man and Orlando Jones as a serious cop? You know, this is definitely the Star Trek mirror universe.
Both on Fox, right?
Both on Fox.
Yeah, Andre, has Andre Brower ever done a comedy?
Maybe when he was
not
younger.
Really.
But I'm used to him, you know, Law and Order, the type of serious type roles, you know. And he's playing straight man to Adam Sandberg as his boss in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And Orlando Jones, well, let's just say, folks, if you've seen me go crazy over the past couple of days over this show, we're going to do a lot of talking about Sleepy Hollow. Just call it a hunt.
Yeah, let's just get into it, folks. Sleepy Hollow premiered last Monday. Episode 2 is coming up in a few days. I enjoyed what I saw. Of course, it's based on the Washington Irving short story, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. The property, I hate to use the term intellectual property. That's what it is. I mean, the story dates back to the 1800s, and yet the fact that it has lasted this long, Darryl, and that it has been used in so many different devices, TV shows, movies, the film that Christopher Walken was in and Johnny Depp. That, to me, was like one of the best interpretations of The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. Before we get into it any further, from my perspective, what are your thoughts on this thing? What did you like? What did you dislike? Is it too soon? What do you think?
Well, hey, I look at it this way, okay? The only thing I really disliked, and it turned it into a positive, was the jail scene, all right? And, folks, if you've seen it, you know, it touched the nerve, you know, where of course, Ichabod Crane comes from Revolutionary War times. At least that's how it's framed in the show. And, what is the girl's name? Hold on, I'll get it to you. Nicole Beharie plays the lieutenant that arrests him, okay, in suspicion of these murders, you know, or not arrests him but confronts him, and she's African American, and in Revolutionary War times it's kind of different back then. That whole conversation was a little awkward, but it made sense because. If you come from the deep past where African Americans were slaves, and all of a sudden here's one in a position of somewhat power, you know, that might be a little culture shock. It made me uncomfortable, but that was a good thing. That was a good thing because you saw them naturally vibe as the show goes on. To Orlando Jones, you know what? I've always looked at Orlando Jones as a joke. You know, I've always looked at him as a comedian. He always got me to laugh in stuff like The Replacements. You know, he was strong in this. Folks, if you've never seen him before in any comedy, you would think he's always been a serious actor the way he handled himself here. You know, I was waiting for a cutaway gag. I was waiting for something where his eyes would start bugging out, you know, his trademark, you know, or all of a sudden his hair would become frizzy or something like that. No, they played it straight. And I will have to say this about Sleepy Hollow. It's an interesting take on the Headless Horseman. And I've never really thought of connecting that to where they connected it to. How can I say this without giving too much away? They connected two or three specific things in the Bible and in pop culture that if you sit back on the surface, you're like, wow, that's kind of a reach. But then if you think about it, you know what? It makes sense. The success of this show is going to be how they connect that, and if they lose the audience. Do they do it Alcatraz, where halfway through, when they're trying to make the connections, everybody goes, where the hell are they going? And they lose everybody? Or will viewers stick around? Because as I was telling Afro Nerd, as I was telling Captain from behind the scenes, there is a lot of minority major characters in this, right, including Cal Penn. So give Cal Penn his props for being in this, you know?
No, wait, you mean Frank Cho.
Excuse me, Frank Cho. Sorry, I always get the two of them confused, but Frank Cho. For being in this and not playing stereotypes, everybody played this straight. The problem is, does our society want to see that? It's a tough question, and we're going to get into that. But, like I said, real viewers stick around because you are building layer to top of layer of mystery here. Will they want to stick around? Will they make this the next? Well, Supernatural is played for a little bit for laughs, you know? Maybe an X-Files type little vibe except for the Supernatural, you know? X-Files, not aliens, but X-Files. Never know. Never know. Afro Nerd, back to you.
Yeah, I was going to mention this, and Kim is right on the money on this. When you mentioned Orlando Jones, I mean, we've seen him in a variety of roles, I mean, mostly comedic, but he was in Drumline with Nick Cannon.
Yeah, that is true.
He played essentially Nick Cannon's teacher or mentor with him being a college drummer and a predominantly Saldana was in that as well. She played his love interest, played Nicholas Cannon's love interest. So he's multi-talented. The guy can do it. Just that he came in with the Mad TV series. So we assumed that's all he could do. But hopefully, the only thing I can say is that when you made a comparison between Andre Brower and Orlando Jones, they're both playing police officer heads, sergeants. So I don't know what that is. That seems to be a thing that as black men mature, if they don't necessarily put you in a stereotypical role, they do put you in as a police sergeant, like this overbearing, angry. So that could be a type of type. Because Andre Brower, he played that one in Homicide years ago?
Yes. And, Kim, thanks for reminding me about Drumline. Totally forgot about it because Nick Cannon. But totally forgot about it. So thank you, Kim.
I'll expound on this a bit more because there's a couple of things going on with the series. And, again, folks, we're talking about Fox's latest fantasy horror series, Sleepy Hollow. Before I even get into it, let's get to the captain. Captain, did you get a chance to see Sleepy Hollow? And what are your thoughts on it?
Absolutely. I did get a chance to see it. Now, here's the thing, what people have to realize. There's a big difference between television and theatrical release. You see, in the modern-day era, at the theater, the way these movies are developed now for the audience, you have 25 to 30 minutes to grab the audience from the start of the movie. Otherwise, you lose the audience. That's why if you notice in a lot of these movies, when you go to these days, they give you everything right in the beginning to grab you. Then they start with the character development. With the television series, you have time to develop the characters over a much longer period. Television series, a lot of times, not all the time, are like a nightclub. When you have a nightclub business, the worst thing that can happen is the opening night, it is totally packed to the rafters. Because what happens after that, business begins to decline. You want to have a so-so night and then build up. Because, you know, worst-case scenario, it will always be so-so. All right? That's the way they do it in a nightclub game. Same thing if you remember with these TV series. Arrow, when it first started off so-so. Then it built up and became very good. Elementary started off so-so. Then it built up, started to go very good. This, to me, started off so-so. So we really know what we'll have by the fifth and sixth episode. I think we do have something here based on the first episode. I think this will be a very good series. But we will really know what we have by the fifth or sixth episode because you need time to layer everything, follow the series, and build it as it goes up. Now, the only problem I had, because that's my stick, you know, I noticed these type of things. When they had that opening scene and they were like, I believe it was 1776 or something like that, the way the scene looked, okay, they had on garb from 1776, but to me it looked like it was shot in a forest in the woody area in Queens Village. He didn't capture it correctly. It just didn't, you know, so I had a problem with that, you know. It's supposed to be a time piece, and it didn't look like the time. It just looked like a bunch of individuals running around in 2013 with clothes on from that era. So they didn't capture that correctly. But everything else, I think overall it's so-so, and I think it will build as you go along, and I think we'll have something by the fifth or sixth episode. And that's exactly what you want. You don't want it to be incredible straight off in the first episode, and then you have to try to replicate that every time out, and then the audience is like, this episode is not, this is not. You want to build it. So I think they're right on at this given point. Back over to you, Sir Afro-Nerd.
Yeah, well, a couple of things, and then we're going to move along. Just a couple of things that I noticed. Maybe as time goes on, you know, you start to desire more from these TV shows as far as plausibility. I mean, we know this is fantasy, and you have to accept a lot. You have to go in with a certain mindset, obviously. You have to suspend belief and then just jump on in. Now, for the three of us who are into sci-fi and fantasy and horror and comic books, that's pretty easy. That's as easy as shutting your eyes. But still, at looking at Sleepy Hollow, there's some things that I would have wanted to see. And I would agree with the captain's premise up to a degree as far as what happens from large screen, big screen cinematic releases and small screen. Although I think we're getting into an era where they're starting to merge, because we're seeing that they're putting more money behind these things, the budgets are getting bigger, and for whatever reason, it appears that American citizens suffer from ADD, that you have to grab an audience's attention very quickly, almost like a movie. Just like you said, I would agree that when it comes down to a major cinematic release, it takes 20 or 30 minutes to essentially get to it and grab these people in order for them to sit their butts in the seats and then to tell their friends. With TV, there's been cancellations after two or three episodes, it's done. Sometimes you're lucky if you get maybe 2 or 3 months. And even and there's been shows that Daryl and I have talked about that started out with extremely large audiences. I'm always referencing the Sarah Connor Chronicles. I believe it had like 8 or 9 million views the first time out, but then it at some point started to dip down, and then it was fighting to maintain a second season. In this case, I believe Sleepy Hollow had a strong 10 million viewers. Can it maintain itself? We will see. But I think the premise of, you know, getting to the point quickly is left to the domain of the big screen. I'm not so sure about it, because they got to the point fairly quickly. I mean, we'll see. If there's going to be points where it's going to have to expand the mythology. It's going to have to expand. But they pretty much got to the point within the 30 minutes of the hour-long episode. Now, some things that are going on that we may not be paying attention to that I think needs to be put out there just for your edification. As I said, this is a Washington Irving short story. This is what it's based on, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. And you just sit there and I just realized that this guy essentially slept for 300 years. And this, I think people confuse, because I did it until I actually paid attention. People confuse Ichabod Crane with Rip Van Winkle. And there's a reason why, because Washington Irving in this short story, this collection of short stories, which is what Sleepy Hollow is a part of, the next story was Rip Van Winkle. So really, Sleepy Hollow starts off, Sleepy Hollow, the TV series, starts off as really a melding between Rip Van Winkle sleeping his life away and Sleepy Hollow. So I think that's just, you just got to put that out there and let you know what you're looking at. I like what I see, and Daryl references that also, not to tell too much, that the Headless Horseman is really one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. So So I'll leave it at that. That's how this universe is going to expand. This is getting into a horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic thing with that horseman being one of a number of horsemen that's probably going to show up as the series progresses, if it progresses. But I like what I see. The only thing that I did not like, and then we're going to go to a quick nerdcore groove, is that this guy was in the ground for 300 years. They should have washed his butt. They should have shown him getting acclimated to the 21st century, like simple, grotesque things. Indoor plumbing. Again, having him wash himself. The part that Daryl did not like that I liked that they showed in the trailer was a part that makes sense. The guy woke up, because I think this it said the battle was in 1781. If he wakes up from 1781 to 2013 and sees a black woman in charge, he should ask that question. And the part that was cool was that, well, listen, he was against slavery. He was about that. So he clearly became PC instantly. So that was cool. Which would have been cooler is they talked about George Washington. They should have said, hey, this is the new president. That would have been hot. Hey, this is the new one. He would have, well, you know, who knows what he would have done. But that would have been comedic, and it would have been interesting to see what. Perhaps they'll show that in episode two. So, gentlemen, any thoughts on that? Am I off base before we go to a nerdcore?
Well, I won't say I didn't like it. It may be uncomfortable, but it fits. You know, if everybody's buddy-buddy right off the bat with the age and era gap, then it's kind of thing. Well, about your thing with the washing himself and all that, you know what? It goes to what the captain is saying. You'll have time for all the mundane stuff as the series goes on. They needed to get to the action. You know, they needed to get to – they needed that hook in, you know. And let's face it, having your partner get his head cut off in the first 3 minutes, him shooting the headless horseman and no effect, you know, I think that grabbed viewers in right away, like, crud, you know, like that. Hey, they had to do it. And honestly, I think the truck scene in the beginning, that scared him 10 major ways to stupid, you know, because what the hell is that contraption? But all of a sudden, you're out on the highway, and here comes this strange apparatus battling towards you, missing you by an inch. He's not in Kansas. He's not in Sleepy Hollow 1700s anymore here. This just got real. Captain?
Yeah, well, that's the part. I'm going to Q-Storm in the chat room, our friend Q. He says, Crane seemed more annoyed than freaked out at the modern day. Remember how freaked out Captain America was in the first movie. See, that's what I'm getting at. See, the Cap was freaked out, and it was only, 60 years later, 70 years later. This guy was gone for 300 years. He should have been, I mean, he was still at a, coming from a period where people were very superstitious. You know, they would still put leeches on people back then to cure certain ails. So he should have been way freaked out. I mean, it's the part where he touches asphalt before that scene with the truck and the car and everything. I mean, the whole concept of horseless carriages and everything like that, there should have been a little bit more time with him being really freaked out. And then you snap a picture of Barack Obama on him. This is the new president. This is Washington's successor. That's what I would have wanted to see. That then you have a show. I still love the show, but they still skirted around certain issues. And for him to be around for 300 years, and they should have washed his ass, man. 300 years, you don't put – there's no way a guy is going to come up out of the ground at 300 years and he just interrogate him without, like, basically doing something about his – he must stink. I mean, come on.
As I said before, what you're essentially saying is there's plot holes all through this. But as we go on with other episodes, the plot holes will fill in because we've seen this before. We've seen this type of thing. What is going on? How did he exactly sleep for 300 years? We know the concept, but we don't know totally how he slept for 300 years. We know something about it. They hinted about it. There's a lot to be filled in. That's why we have to watch and tune in. You know, so he goes all through it.
So they give this guy a towel and soap and then watch it. Look, we saw this. So I'm thinking about this now. We saw this with what was the movie that Sylvester Stallone and Wesley Snipes, what they were in?
Demolition Man.
Demolition Man, in certain things he didn't know what to do. They addressed that. They need to hire Daryl B. and D. Burt for high six figures as consultants to straighten this crap out. I'm just saying.
They only have 45 minutes. That's it.
But
they only have 45
minutes. You said a movie. There's a difference.
You know,
don't have time in one episode. You don't have time, Afro Nerd. You got to build it through the episodes. You don't have the time.
So we got to wait until episode. We got to wait till episode 5 until he washes his ass.
Yep.
All right.
No, I'll say it again like this. Will this be Alcatraz, where the first couple of shows hook you in, but you didn't do enough, like, sensible plot hole filling in, as Captain mentioned, where you begin to lose the audience because everybody's expecting plots to get filled in and you're not touching on it, and you eventually get canceled? Or will this be like X-Files, where, okay, we leave you dangling after each episode, but and as each episode proceeds, the subplots build and build and fill in points and extend the conspiracy, extend the questions. Is Mulder crazy? Is Mulder, that's what this has to be. Think about it. We got witches. We got a headless horseman. We got the four horsemen of the apocalypse. We got secret societies. We got Washington's secret plan. You know, this is national treasure without the ha-ha and with supernatural involved.
All right, let's go to a quick. And also, Darryl, you got to work on your connection. I don't know if you're moving around, but your connection is getting a bit scratchy.
Sorry about that. I'll find
right.
a place.
Now it sounds good. All right, let's go to a quick Nerdcore group. When we get back, I want to actually discuss GTA 5, 800 million by Tuesday. 800 million by Tuesday, gentlemen. 800 million by Tuesday. And, of course, we've been failing to address DC's villain month, or as I like to say, Back to the Future circa 1993 with bad spoil covers. I'm just saying.
Oh, you dissed it.
Oh, yes. Daryl may think differently, but I'm not comfortable with the covers. It's a blatant cry for more money. Blatant greed to me. Blatant greed. All right. Going to a quick Nerdcore group, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back in about 2 minutes. This is Deltron 3030. Featuring the Gorillaz, Sunshine in a Bag. We'll be right back. Screw.
I ain't happy. I'm feeling glad I got sunshine in a bag. I'm useless, but not for long. The future is coming on. I ain't happy. Feeling glad I got sunshine in a bag. I'm useless, but not for long. The future is coming on, it's coming on, it's coming on, it's coming on, it's coming on.
Finally, someone let me out of my cage. Now, time for me is nothing cause I'm counting no A's. Nah, I couldn't be there. Nah, you shouldn't be scared. I'm good at repairs and I'm under each snare. Intangible, bet you didn't think so, I command you to. Panoramic view, look, I'll make it all manageable. Pick and choose, sit and lose, all you different crews. Chicks and dudes, so you think it's really kicking tunes. Picture you getting down in a prison tube, like you lit the fuse. You think it's fictional, mystical, maybe. Spiritual hero who appears in you to clear your view when you're too crazy. Lifeless to those, the definition for what life is. Priceless to you because I put you on the high shit. You like it? Gun smoke, you're righteous with one talk. You're psychic among no possess you with one go.
I'm feeling glad I got sunshine in a bag. I'm useless, not for long. The future is coming on. Ain't happy.
Again, this is the Grindhouse edition of Afro Nerd Radio. The comic shop up first, of course. And, of course, at 7 p.m. we have Afro Nerd Radio. That was Deltron 3030 featuring the Gorillaz, Sunshine in the Bag, classic. Feel free to call in, folks. This is a pulp-flavored discussion, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Getting back into the fold, I want to talk about – let's just jump into this – Forever Evil slash DC Comics Villain Month. For the month of September, which is, I guess, a crossover event with – well, Forever Evil is a crossover event, and the Villains Month is a – I guess one-third of their books are devoted toward the villain. So, you know, the premise sounds cool. And I shouldn't lambaste the covers. I mean, I guess the covers are okay, but it seems like it's somewhat of a ploy. You know, as opposed to, like, really honest storytelling, a ploy to get people just to buy books. I mean, listen, people do need to buy books, but give them some good stories. Hey, I'm buying some of this stuff, but I want to get Daryl's opinion on the Villains Month, and also the Forever Evil crossover event that this is connected to.
All right, you want my thoughts on it? Everybody that's been running out and grabbing all these covers, you guys are all suckers. S-U-C-K-E-R-S. Suckers. I look at it like this one, okay? I collect from DC now two books, okay? Which means I have three covers that I really had, or three books I really had to get, okay? I had to get... A Doll H for Hero is gone now, but they promised a coda with this Doll E for the Justice League. I picked it up. I read like 5-6 pages. I started laughing. I dropped the book. Okay? And I pick up Earth 2. So I had to pick up the Desaad and the Solomon Grundy. The Desaad story, I'm just like, The only one that actually was worth the money was the Solomon Grundy. And it isn't because it's tied into the event. It's just I wanted to see how this version of Solomon Grundy, I wanted to see his origin. All right? A lot of people went into this thinking, oh, these villain books are all going to be connected to the Forever Evil, the main miniseries. Oh. And you pick up the book and you read it. And essentially, it's like a who's who entry for each of these villains, you know, to see their motivations in this new universe. But the problem is, if you're like other people who, oh, this was the Justice League story. Oh, that's where they left off. Oh, it's the crime syndicate. Oh, I want a continuation. I want at least an allusion to what's happening there. You're not getting that. The only books that are touching on that besides the Forever Evil book is the Rogues Rebellion book for Flash, and the Luther book for thing, his one shot. Every other book has gone onto a separate tangent. Now, if you're a hardcore DC fan and you love the direction and all that, these books are all for you. And I know a lot of guys that have gone crazy running around trying to get these books. Oh, I got to get it. I got to get it. And I'm like, wow. You remember 1993? You remember 1994? You remember 1995? Can I paint the loser on your forehead now? Captain, I don't know. I can't explain it any better, man. You want to take a whack at this?
Do you like the covers or not? Now.
Man!
Okay, that's good.
The cover doesn't... Hey, you know 3D films? I said I hate 3D. To me... Only one or two movies have ever made good use of 3D. Star Trek Into Darkness, Pacific Rim. Outside of that, 3D sucks, okay? I look at these covers and I'm like, okay, that's cool. I'll pick the book up just because I'm interested in it. But you know what? You're not adding anything to the product. All you're doing is giving them a dollar more.
One quick thing, I want to mention it to the audience, because we're referencing the 90s, and some folks might be getting lost, like, what's our big beef with the 90s? In the 90s, you had heavy-duty speculation with comic books. There was a point, let's say, the early inception of comic books used to sell in the millions when they were 10 cents. When they were right before World War II, comic books sold in the millions to children. And even actually to adults at that time also. At some point after World War II and going into the 60s and 70s, comic books started to not sell as well. Then something happened with the death of Superman and the value of these comic books and speculators. Then you had the news up until this day. All of a sudden now, major media outlets report on plot points regarding comic books. Comic books are big business again. But in the 90s specifically, we had a lot of speculation, you know, a lot of books that were just jumping up in price. And, you know, if a news report came out, and Darryl remembers this, if a news report came out that was speculating a book, it would drive folks who had no interest in comic book collecting to come into the stores and to drive the prices of these books up, and these books ultimately ended up being valueless, and they were heavily dependent upon these wild foil covers, purely meant to titillate your eye, to titillate your prurient interest, and at the end of the day, they look good, but they're not worth toilet paper, and this is reminiscent of this. Now, this we're not dealing with foil covers, but we're dealing with lenticular covers, a lenticular printing that gives the impression of movement. So when you look at the covers, it looks like the characters are actually animated. So again, we're getting back to bait and switch and people urinating on my leg and telling me, hey, guess what? It's raining.
But and here's the thing too, right? I asked somebody, I went to Midtown Comics, I went to Jim Hanley's, I went to Superhero Comics. I hit about six or seven different stores, okay? And I asked people that were buying these in bulk, are you interested in the character? No, I'm interested in the cover. But the story doesn't matter. I got that response about 10, 11 times. And in the back of my head, I'm thinking, we're lemmings. We're lemmings. You know what? Just put a fresh new coating on the crap, and they'll buy it. And sure enough, that's what's happening here. It's one thing if you've been following the story before and you need to pick it up. All right, there's a regular issue with the same coverage, just not 3D. But these guys that were going crazy for the 3D cover, like I said, you deserve what you're going to get, because it's not like these stories have been quality. There hasn't been a story through this thing that has shit. Like, have you heard one comic collector, one comic book fan run up to you in any of the shops and go, dude, you have to pick up this book because of the story. You have to pick up. Don't just worry about the 3D. You have to pick up this story. No. Uh-oh.
No, I'm here. Sorry about that.
But that's what I'm saying. It's a fresh new color coding on the crap.
All right, let's move along to the next topic. I really want to get into this. GTA 5. Now, let me first say that I was initially hesitant about picking up this game simply because, well, first of all, I've never really been a big GTA guy. I know that probably sounds crazy because GTA is so incredibly popular. It's been popular for years. This one I might get because the premise is always the same, essentially, but this takes place in California, as most of these games do. I even spoke to Mr. Starks earlier, and we were wondering how come there hasn't been a New York landscape game or a New Jersey landscape game if they're talking about robbing people in cars. I mean, that's just one thing. Why not have a New Jersey or New York version of GTA? That's just a side note. But in this case, I need to get this game because, from my understanding, they have such a detailed map of California and that the landscape is so vast and accurate, especially for those who are Californians. They're just raving about this, and it's so vast that the game itself requires its own GPS in order for you to navigate. So that intrigues me. So I probably will get this game eventually, but I was hesitant because in a month and a half, we have Xbox One coming, and we have PS4 coming. But I was informed also by Mr. Starks that if I were to buy GTA 5 for PS3, as long as I have proof, well, it's a possibility, because I know in other games they have this. I'm led to believe that it's a possibility that if I buy GTA 5 for PS3, in theory, if I get GTA 5 for PS4, I'm supposed to only have to pay $10. So that makes sense. So that's one of the reasons why I was hesitant to buy new games if a new console is coming out within 2 months. But be that as it may, I got to go into a quick Afro nerd rant connected with GTA 5. We have a man, young man by the name of Rohan Dawkins. And Rohan Dawkins was robbed in Florida, Delray Beach, Florida, by a couple. Now, Rohan is mentally challenged, but he's a working, mentally challenged young man who was able to save up, I guess, every couple of weeks, $10. He was enough. And I admire hardworking individuals, especially those who have challenges. So you have a young man of color, 21. Now, he's mentally challenged, and he's working. We know of others who are his age who are not mentally deficient and cannot find a job. But that's another story. He saves up his money, and these two troglodytes who are married rob and beat this guy and take his GTA 5 game as soon as he came out of the GameStop. So, I mean, people, be careful. It's just a game. But the fact that they tried to rob this gentleman, well, they robbed him, and then they tried to go to another GameStop and try to get some kind of trading thing going on. But the fact that these people would rob a mentally deficient young man, now I'm hearing that they had intended to rob a white person, as if robbing anybody is apropos. I don't know. And also the fact that it's a game about robbery. That makes it even more crazy.
Sorry, GTA fans. Saints Row 4 is better. just learned to live with it. Saints Row 4.
I'm hearing that too.
I get superpowers, goddamn, to repel an alien invasion. I'm not a video game head, but guess what? That trumps beating up people, prostitution, robbery. Yo, I get superpowers to fight an alien invasion. You're done. You're done. And if I wanted a map of New York City, I'd break out my old Dreamcast and put on Crazy Taxi. Ba-dum-bum. Take that, GTA. Take that.
Yeah, Cavito Man is telling us that GTA 4 was in New York. You know, I'm not into this franchise, but I'm surprised that, because Stark says he's a big supporter. I think he has all of these. He didn't mention anything about GTA 4 being in New York. Are you aware of this, Daryl?
No, I zoned out after San Andreas. After San Andreas, I just zoned out. I was like, you know what? The novelty is gone. And then hearing the lengths that some people have been going to get this game totally puts me off. Okay? Captain, help me out here. Where has our, like, moral center gone where you are beating people up for a video game? All right? This is why you give me technology and all the advances and all of that. That's great. But you hear about people getting shot for iPhones, get fights in line for the Galaxy. Now a mentally challenged person gets robbed for GTA 5. Yeah, that doesn't help this image too good.
It's all the same people, you know? It's all the same people. It's the same people that start the quote-unquote beef for the Jordans when the new Jordans come out. It's all the same people. It's the same individuals. That's what you're dealing with here. You see? You had a subculture that no longer is a subculture. You took the subculture and you made it pop. Everyone's involved. So, you know, these things are going to happen. You know, this is what it is, you know? Of course, that's what they want. They want it to be a big, huge, huge, mega, huge pop event. That's what it is. It's about making money. We understand that. But, you know, these things will happen when these other people are involved. Hint, hint. We know who these other people are.
Well, you know, at Afronaut Radio, we're more inclined to identify them, you know, more succinctly.
That's right.
We try to be a little bit more, you know, lighthearted. But what you're saying is a reality. And I guess probably with the Grand Theft Auto franchise, I guess, you know, listen, the part of it that disturbs me, and it's critiqued before, is that the storylines deal with, you know, picking up prostitutes and robbing and killing people. I mean, the game, what these folks did for the game is very much about the game as far as gameplay. So it's a little surreal, I guess. I might get this thing, you know, only because of what I'm hearing about the technology behind it intrigues me. More importantly, though, one of my colleagues recently told me, because we both ordered both games simultaneously, he mentioned something about what is it? What is the shooting game, Daryl, that's coming out for the next PlayStation?
What the new Ghost Recon one you're talking about?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that one looks incredible. He received because he placed a pre-order for it. And that's another thing, too. Why are people going crazy, bat-ass crazy, this PG, bat-ass crazy, Affleck bat-ass crazy, when you just pre-order this stuff? I mean, when I go to GameStop, when I buy one game, the person at the desk would ask you, hey, you want to put in, do you want to pre-order? And then they call you up, and you go there the next day. You go there without any difficulties, and you pick up the game. This chaos is unnecessary. I guess the only thing that I guess, if you were to be fair, is you could still do it the right way, like this young man did. Walk out, and then get these ne'er-do-wells to beat you about your forehead. I wish that would happen to me. Because God forbid, I'm not going to get into a
violence.
I'm not going to go there, but you know, it angers me. Well, I really don't wish, but I'm not going to be an easy target. Let's put it that way.
Well, let me take you back to the old philosopher. I believe the dude's name is the RZA. You know, protect your neck. Diversify your bonds. You know, if you want it, chances are somebody behind you wants it too, and they don't mind going through you to get it.
Is it that serious?
We know we can pre-order. We know we can look up the release dates. We know to call other people, and then you have those ignoramuses. All right, I'll combine a couple of words there. Ignoramuses out there who don't know a thing about it. We see it when the comics come out. We see it when movies come out. And what they want to do, they want to. You've done all the preparation, all the work, and they want to usurp your place. That's what happened to this poor kid. And I hope this kid gets locked in a room with these two bastards and they give him a baseball bat. So you won the Grand Theft Auto, right? Let me show you some real life Grand Theft Auto now. I got a bat with me. Let's see what you're going to do. That's justice.
Well, you know something else, too. And this is a married couple. Well, they're saying they're married, but they are a married couple in their late 20s that did this to this young man. And, you know, I admire the young man for the fact that he has difficulties, but he's thriving, and he had enough foresight to save up for the game, and he just wants to play a game. And these two fools come up and just, you know, it's so easy to make someone innocent have a bad day. I mean, it's incredibly disheartening, and this is why we say what we say on the show. You have to have a third eye. You have to be discerning. You have to have foresight. You got to avoid these knuckleheads out here because matter of fact, folks, go to our Facebook page, Afro Radio's Facebook page. I have a clip of a rather profound clip. A rather profound clip from the Black Authority. I think the gentleman refers to himself as the Black Authority. And he breaks down what's happening structurally with our society. And it's called The Dumb. An intelligent perspective. And he talks about just what is happening with us, with people. We're going to, as what the captain would say, a feral state. We're going back to a feral state. It's simple and plain.
Oh, man. I guess it could be worse. We could get Spider-Man busted for robbery. Oops, too soon.
That happened too. Forgot about that too. Yeah. Now, you know something? That bothers me on another level, too, because, okay, these are fictional characters that we all grew up with and we all love these characters, but we may complain about Marvel and DC and all these other books, but at the heart of these books, they are morality tales. And Peter Parker's famous with great power, what is it? With great power comes great responsibility. Those are profound statements that you kind of live by. And for this kid to go in with a Spider-Man costume to rob, you know, it is what it is. I'm going into the Afro-Nerd rant now, gentlemen. It is what it is. All right, quickly, because of time constraints, what about – now, this I'm not comfortable with. We're hearing that Agent Carter – from the Captain America mythology and from the movie, that she's getting her own TV series. Why?
Why? I agree.
I'll tell you the whole thing. It's all about building the universe, building the mythology. All right? If they do it well, it should do the same thing that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. does. You know, expand it a little bit more. You could put in the foundations for Hydra. You could put in the foundations for some of the Marvel secret societies, True That, showing how some of the secret societies along with S.H.I.E.L.D. grew in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, you know, in preparation for what's happening today. If you do it right. The problem is business feels like it's being tacked on, you know. And top this on. It's too important these days, all right? If you're going to roll with this, you don't want anything to bring down your franchise unnecessarily, all right? If they built Peggy Carter like how she was in the Grunewald Captain America type, how she was there, how they showed her grow, and how she's like, she has ties to everything, you know. Just ties to certain big groups, how she has contacts everywhere because of her adventures during the 40s and 50s while Cap isn't there. If they could do that, this would be great. The problem is, when we're talking TV, it's a mixed bag. Cap?
Well, here's the thing with this. You know, there's a fine line of hitting it and doing the right amount of promotion and setting up universes, setting up different timelines, and tying everything into one, then doing it just too much where it becomes a watered-down product. With something like this, you have to be careful because, again, it gets back to this, like the comic book covers. It's starting to look like just a money grab, you know? It's just starting to look like a money grab. Come on, man. You know, I really don't want to give her a chance. I really don't want to give her a chance. That's just where I am right now. I'm just going to say it. I don't want to give her a chance. I don't think she needs her own series. I'm just saying it like that. Too bad. Who knows? It might be the best thing, you know, since sliced bread. But right now, I just don't want to give her a chance. You know? Give it to somebody else. Let's see Blade versus Captain America. Let's see Black Panther versus Captain America. Give me something else.
And cue the D-Bert rant in 3, 2, 1. Cut.
Go. First of all, we're going to be excited about seeing S.H.I.E.L.D. coming up this Monday. Or was it Tuesday?
Yes.
We're going to be excited about it. But I always felt, and I mentioned this before on air, I always felt that S.H.I.E.L.D. would have worked better as a movie series in the James Bond vein. Because James Bond is really the only only spy series that they kind of own that genre, for better or worse. And this would have opened the door, because just like Marvel has Guardians of the Galaxy, they're opening up the door for an intergalactic Star Wars kind of imprint. S.H.I.E.L.D. could have opened up the door on a big screen for their own version of, because essentially Nick Fury and that whole team with the flying cars, it's very much about espionage, and the superheroes act as backdrops. The superheroes are actually more like bit players in a S.H.I.E.L.D. comic. So I don't know why they never looked at it that way. Just have some of the superheroes that we know do cameos on the big screen, and let this be Marvel's spy imprint. So hopefully the TV series will live up. I mean, but TV sometimes lacks in comparison to what can be done on a big screen. So that's my only thing about this. And with a Peggy Carter series in the comic books, you know, listen, Peggy Carter, she dies because she would have been like 80 or 90 by the time Steve wakes up, and then he wakes up to Sharon Carter, who looks identical to her grandmother. That would have made sense. It's just certain things they're just not doing. That were done. All these issues that were dealt with in the comic books, they create problems when they don't. They leave plot holes that were addressed in the comic books. They leave them open in the movies. So I don't know what the hell's going on. And also, why do we bypass Black Panther and all these other black heroes? We can't get the Black Panther thing going, but we can greenlight a Peggy Carter series out of the blue that has less mythology attached to it than some of these black characters. I'm just saying.
Well said. Well said. Preach, my brother. Preach.
Wait. And one last thing, one last shot across the bow. S.H.I.E.L.D., you've been using him in every one of the commercials. Could I get J. August Richards on one of the promotional posters? I'm just saying. I see him in every commercial jumping out of a building, rescuing someone, you know, but every promotional poster, he is not on it. Come on, ABC, you're dropping the ball.
All right. Time to go to the next door. Apple Nerd.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Spock with a beard?
I think not.
might be me tells the truth about.
What?
One, Rodney King should have got his head beat for driving drunk and being grown in a Hyundai.
Two, O.J. did it.
O.J. did it. Rosa Parks ain't did nothing but sit her black tail down.
Oh, that's right.
Hey, I'm going to back you up on that, because, see, look, he was on the bus back in the day, and he on the bus now.
Eddie, not only is what you're saying not true, it's wrong and disrespectful for you to discuss Rosa Parks in that way.
Exactly.
Wait. Hold on here. Is this a barbershop? Is this a barbershop?
It's
a barbershop. I mean, we can't talk straight in the barbershop. Then where can we talk straight? We can't talk straight nowhere else. You know, this ain't nothing but healthy conversation. That's all right.
You gotta tear on the pop down.
There ain't nobody exempt in the barbershop. You know that. Ain't nobody exempt. You can talk about whoever and whatever, whenever you want to in the barbershop.
Why you gotta tear on the pop down like this, Eddie? You know you're wrong. Keep on walking. You're wrong. You're walking by yourself this time, pal. I ain't with you. I'll tell you one thing. You better not never let Jesse Jackson hear you talking about that.
Man, just.
No. You're
a lawyer. Randy, Tito, Freddy, action. I'll take them all.
You know, Calvin.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to enter this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funk and lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a lock.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio. With your guide, Divas, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Good evening once again, folks. This is the second half of the Grindhouse double feature program. The call-in number is 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. The water is always warm, so feel free to buzz on in and give us your opinions, protestations, questions, you name it. We got it. Folks, we really didn't get through all of the midweek review show's topics. So it's essentially going to be a continuation of Wednesday's show. A lot of things we just did not get a chance to really dig our teeth into. And also, I have another classic rant, and it stems from, this is probably going to be an MP3 file on repeat, damn it, but I got to go there with this article I saw from Ebony Jet Online. And I understand that this is probably why Sergio, our friend Sergio Mims, is no longer with that operation. I've had admiration for Ebony for what it has done in the past. But based on this article, they've got to do some kind of reverse engineering. This sucks. The article sucks. I'll get to it. About a five-minute rant. First up, quick groove, rant, then a discourse. This is Catch Me If You Can by Liv Warfield. Someone from the NPG, someone from Prince's operation, I guess a protege. We'll be right back. Let's groove.
I'm out of here.
That was Liv Warfield, Catch Me If You Can, a member of the MPG who's going out on her own, but I believe she's still under the tutelage of His Royal Badness. Try to check that out. Definitely an urgent-sounding jam. I kind of dig it. Folks, this is Afro Radio, the Grindhouse Edition. And, of course, I have my partner in white-collar crime in attendance. Captain, let's get to it. It's your time.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Okay, Afro Nerd. Rantificate, made up word. I'm looking forward to this rant. Go ahead, sir. The floor is yours.
All right. It's a rant that's probably like all the other rants, but it's a bit more specific as far as where to go. Folks, go to the chat room. I put a link to this article written by Jamila Lemieux, and she is the news and lifestyle editor for Ebony Magazine or Ebony Online. And first of all, I'm wondering how this young woman got her job, and I'm wondering how people arrive at their thought processes. And it goes back to this whole notion of the lack of critical thinking skills. We really have come to the point where people, you know, you're allowed to have your opinion. Definitely. Your opinion can be so diametrically different than the captain's or myself. That's no problem. But your opinion just does have to fulfill certain logic centers. It has to be something that really cannot be deconstructed. Someone should not be able to pull apart your argument. And I don't know how people get these jobs. I don't know the point of her article. The article is called "Beautiful Struggler, Good and Black." Jamila Lemieux says that policing black behavior won't end racism, nor will it uplift our people. You know, I can almost leave it there, Captain. I can almost leave it there without even reading it.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yo. I mean, it's crazy.
Yo. Yeah. Oh, that's crazy.
Is she insane? Let me repeat that, folks. You know, wow.
That sounds crazy to me.
Now, I'm looking at her photographs. Her photographs,
she's a beautiful young woman.
I got to give her credit. She's attractive in her photograph.
Stop with that, man.
Well, maybe she needs some midnight.
No.
Maybe she needs to be straightened out.
We want sensible women. That's what we want now, all right?
Sometimes they need 12 a.m. Bible study.
This is not 91 through 96. We're out of that era. No more.
Nude Bible study. I'm just saying.
Good.
All right. Enough of that, folks. But she does have a kind of a fetching picture, I think. Anyway, she says, let me repeat this again, beautiful struggler, good and black, Jamila Lemieux says that policing black behavior won't end racism, nor will it uplift our people. Okay, we're in trouble. Now, with the article is this picture of a Deborah Brown and Don Lemon. I guess she's has an issue with their hairstyles. I don't, but whatever. She says, she opens it up by saying, who taught you to hate yourself? Malcolm X's famous query has been on my mind lately. It was there when President and First Lady Obama took brand new HBCU alumni and their families to task on Morehouse and Bowie State's graduation days. It was there when Don Lemon posed Boy Scout-esque steps that we could take to end racism. I thought of those words when our beloved POTUS came for us again in his comments during the celebration of the anniversary on the March on Washington, and when Sheryl Underwood sat beneath a shiny wig and before a largely white audience and mocked nappy black hair, and again yesterday as the image of a crying black girl circulated the net after her black-led school punished her for having black girl hair. I don't think any of these people would tell you that they hate black people or themselves or things that are associated with blackness, but the uncomfortable thread running all through these narratives is the suggestion that we have to be good to be good enough, to be respected, to be human, to be validated in the eyes of white folk. Because, you know, this is what really matters. In fact, I often feel like some of us are walking around wearing invisible WWWFD bracelets. She has an acronym here, WWWFD bracelets around their wrists in hopes of somehow policing themselves into validity. What would white folks do? And what can we do to get them to tell us we're okay? Who do we have to be to gain their respect? If we play nice, we will go finally rant. Will you finally treat us that way? Let me repeat that. If we play nice, will you finally treat us that way? All right. It's a rather lengthy article, but you get the gist. You get where she's going. This is where I'm talking about, what I'm talking about, critical analysis, critical thinking skills, which this young lady appears not to have. When she says Don Lemon posed Boy Scout-esque steps that we could take to end racism, that's not what was going on. And to make sure, I went back to check out the Don Lemon clip again. He did not make any reference to these five-point plans to ending racism. There's never anything saying, well, if black people did these things, it would end racism. That's not what happened. But I'm finding out more and more from reading, from my own empirical data, from other like-minded podcasters, from the Oracle, from just like-minded people and reading, that there's a dearth of critical analysis cross-racially. But especially since we're talking about this, especially in a sense of tribalism, in a sense of our own communities, we, many of us, not all of us, but many of us of a certain generation lack critical analysis. We feel someone said something, or we think someone said something, but it's not actually what was said. I go by what people actually say. I looked at the clip again, Captain. He did not talk about connecting, doing some of these things that would improve our lives to ending racism. But that's what she thought he said. That's what she heard, although that's not what was said. So from the beginning paragraph, she's already wrong. In the legal system, it's such a thing as coming into the courtroom with dirty hands. You can't come in to a courtroom complaining that someone stole your marijuana. You can't do that. Because marijuana from the beginning is illegal, at least in 48 states. So what am I missing here, Captain? It's something, I mean, I see so many people. Matter of fact, there's so many commenters that came in to respond to this young lady's piece that gave her a high five. They agreed with this. All Don Lemon was saying was there's some stuff that we have to address in order to make our lives a little bit better for our own sake. She goes into a rant about, well, why, you know, you just can't be good for white people, essentially, or asking for corrective measures. You know who I'm good for? I'm good for myself. I'm good for the Oracle. I'm good for the Wedger. I'm good for my family and friends. And I'm good for society. I'm not good for white people. I'm good for the sake of being good. Somehow all of that is being lost in this piece. And I've seen other pieces and other podcasts that seem to think this way. That for some reason, because Don Lemon said this with an earshot of white folk, that, well, we can't – this is some of the reasoning why I think things are the way they are as far as the dysfunctionalism, Captain. Some of the dysfunctionalism is based on a belief system that, well, we can't comply with these folks because we can't do certain things and straighten things up because it will do what white folks are asking us to do, as if white people are asking you to do these things. You do these things because it's betterment. It makes your life better. Not because it makes white people accept you. I mean, we see Asian folk and those of Indian descent that are becoming, if you look into a stereotypical mode, doctors, lawyers, math, medicine, they're not necessarily well-liked by white racists or by race, not well-liked. But you know what? Their lives are a lot easier. I mean, I spoke to from Mr. Starks from the Honor Guard earlier today, and he chuckled because I told him, I said, and I'm gonna pass the mic to the captain, then we're gonna move along. I said to him, can you imagine if a lower tier white person were to berate me as I go into my vintage split window Corvette with pony hair shoes, a fresh cut, and a beauteous woman on my passenger side with nice feet, of course, Captain. If he calls me a nigger as I go into my $1.5 million penthouse apartment, do you think I would really care if this guy called me a nigger? Really? Could that actually bother me? Would I do these things to please him? Or would I be doing these things because I like that car, I like manicured toes in my passenger seat, and I like living well? If black folks were to press excellence, not that we're not, because we do have folks that are doing that, but if we were to actually create a meme of betterment, and we started to do certain things, make certain movements, and you see how, let's say, the racists come out and start spewing hatred at you, would you really care? Really? You think Sanaa Lathan, as attractive as she is, and she as well-paid as she is, do you think some PWT coming up to her saying something crazy, that would really bother her as she goes into her mansion? That's it. Thoughts, Captain?
Well, there's a couple of things happening. They say the generation of the 40-year-old and younger lack critical thinking skills. As I always call them, the cybernetic organism, because you're plugged into Facebook, you're plugged into your texting, you're plugged into Twitter 24/7. That's where your mind is. That's why when these fools do these little crimes, they have to throw it up on Twitter and Facebook, because that's where their mind is. They cannot be separated from their mind. So these individuals will lack critical thinking skills. Critical thinking is in the 40 and over, if you notice. They have critical thinking skills. Now, also, too, when you're dealing with Don Lemon, he more or less was talking about something BA, Black Achievement, when he calls in and he said a few months ago, can you compete? Can you compete? Plain and simple, can you compete? If you do these things here, you will be able to compete in a society a lot better. Does not mean racism will stop. It means you'll be able to compete a lot better. That your competition, your ability to compete with the competition has been raised. Now, if we look at the Nigerian community, by the way, the Nigerian community, who is black, is what? The most educated nationality. How are they able to pull this off? Now, let's also look at black people on a whole. Let's look according to the statistics, right? Asian community, 10% out of wedlock birth rate. Also considered the most educated. White community, 23% out of wedlock birth rate. They have a high education level too. Non-white Hispanic, 43 to 46% out of wedlock birth rate. That's where it starts to get feral. That's why when Afro-Nerd always talks about it, he says black and brown, that's what he's referring to. You, the black man now, it's at 73% out of wedlock birth rate. Now, as you pull the father out of the home, the violence goes up according to the out of wedlock birth rate, and so does the lack of education. There's your problems right there. Now, if you can reverse that, you begin to heal yourself over a period of time. Yes, there'll still be racism, but now you can start to build an infrastructure. You can start to do for yourself. There'll still be racism, but you'll be able to compete a lot better. You're not competing. You've become a feral, not all of you, not all. You've become the feral, gormless, menstrual, wage slave, savage that you see running about. Not all of you, but a lot of you. Yes. So that's all I want to say. Can you compete? That's it. Racism will always exist. But if you set yourself up to be able to compete, they cannot deny you because you build your own infrastructure. Back over to you, Sol Arafanerd.
All right. It seems that we have some callers. I'm going to address the calls, and I'm going to go into another story that deals with, as you would put it, feral, gormless beasts, dealing with a former NFL player, legendary Patriot, actually. Did he play for the Patriots, Captain?
Yes.
The Patriots, I think the Raiders, too, actually, during the early 80s, Brian Holloway, and what happened to him. And this is another rant. This is going to be another classic legendary rant about just – it is without a doubt – his story as a victim, as a legitimate victim, just what's going on. This is cross-racial, folks. This is the white folks now, not Brian Holloway, but what was done to him and his home specifically. We're going to get into this. All right, let's go to the phones. Again, we're talking about – let me just go to the phones. I can barely get into it. 484, Africa Radio, tell us who you are, where you're calling from.
Hey, guys, this is Q Storm calling from Philly.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Yes. I'm going to apologize in advance because when I get emotional about a topic like this, the words don't flow freely.
Okay.
I might stumble
gotcha.
And start. But let me just say real quick, I read the article briefly when you put it up in the chat room. And I have to say, maybe a decade ago, I would have been completely lockstep with what this woman was saying. But I'll say it was around 2005, 2006 when Michael Dean of the Prince podcast, he posted one of your podcasts on his site. It was the one where you were talking about putting the hood on lockdown.
Right.
And I listened to that, and I was like, who was this black man talking about putting black people on lockdown, right? And as I continued to listen to you, I listened to you for maybe you and Captain. I want to give Captain his due respect as well. I listened to you guys for the following year, and what finally, you know how people that call him Deshaun Hannity say they're Hannitized? Yeah. I guess I've been deeper tied to a certain degree, because we don't agree on everything, but I've been deeper tied to a certain degree. And the thing that this woman, that pisses me off to no end when I hear these people talk, when I hear the people talk against Don Lemon, is that they keep measuring the barometer of our success, or what we perceive to be our success, against white folks. No. What we are doing is measuring our barometer of success against black folks.
Well,
because, again, it is not white folks that are causing the statistics to occur that I read about in USA Today in Chicago that has now made that city the number one homicide city of homicides in the country, 500 murders this year.
Wow.
That is not white folks doing that. We can talk about racism all we want to, but it is not white folks pulling the trigger. So when this woman makes the point of saying WWFD, just that statement alone gives white folks power that they don't have over us, because I'm not being threatened physically, maybe with the cops, maybe we could talk about that, but when it comes to me walking out of my house, if I live in a certain neighborhood, it's not white folks that are going to be pulling the trigger on me. So let's get it straight, people. That's all I have to say.
Well, you know, right. What Don Lemon talked about, not to necessarily rehash what he was saying, but some of what he was saying, it was just valid. I don't think it should be to the point where we have to discount what this young man has said. You know, when he talked about littering, you know, I live in a predominantly black neighborhood, although I'm seeing some Asian folk and thankfully some Asian folk, I'm seeing some white folks lingering around. Which I hate to say it, but I like it. I like to see multiracialism, multiculturalism, because it's almost coming off that if you live in a completely black neighborhood, you're going to see some things that's going to make you feel uncomfortable. And when he talked about littering, I see young folk, just as he said, he lives in Harlem no more than, what, half an hour from where I'm broadcasting. And he noted that he saw in a gentrified section of Harlem, because Harlem is on the come up, thankfully, but even still, young and old littering. I see young and old people littering when there are clearly waste baskets within an iframe. Why do we do this? It's like you're literally living in a toilet when you do that. So we have to pretend that these things, we just ignore them. You know, we see young men, jobless, unemployed, pants are sagging. They're sagging deeper than they've ever been. There's, you know, before you would see a little sag, maybe 15 years ago, which was annoying. Now you're seeing 3/4, 7/10 of the underwear exposed. And you can't say anything. The things that he brought up, it's a reality. And we're told to ignore them, that racism is the problem. I mean, and then, you know, she conflates in this article, in the first paragraph, she conflates Cheryl Underwood's infamous self-hatred diatribe, which is exactly what it was. She conflates that with what Don Lemon said about trying to straighten up our act. How are these are two sides of the universe. So to me, it's like, okay, she said something that was clearly deleterious to black cultural standard or black empowerment or black pride. It was definitely an anti-black pride rant. That's clear. She puts that in the same universe as Don Lemon giving constructive criticism that everyone has to abide by, not just black people. I mean, you do have to raise up your pants. You do have to try to speak eloquently. You do have to stop having out of wedlock births. I mean, these are things that everyone that is successful appears to be doing. I mean, it's weird. And this article, I see it clearly. The article is just, now she's saying, well, you don't want to be good because white folks are looking. And what am I missing? And then you have all these other black folks that come in saying, you go, girl. You're correct. I don't get it. I mean, Mrs. Malcolm X, if you're going to be honest, Malcolm X spoke the way that we're speaking. So she only took, she cherry-picked something. But Malcolm X was not soft on black people.
Well, this woman, reading that article, what I read, you know, I know a little bit about the publishing game. I mean, just a little bit, and it smacks me that this woman just needed to create a byline. Maybe she had a couple hours to get it printed, and, you know, she made sweeping accusations, if you will, like you just mentioned, conflating what Don Lemon said with what Cheryl Underwood said. Cheryl Underwood came from a position of self-hate. Don Lemon came from a position of, look, we need to examine ourselves. So she just had to get this thing printed. She was probably had some pressure by her editor, and that's what it smacks of to me.
I guess so, but my only issue with it is that I've seen so many people speak this way, Q. It's not just her. You know, I hear this on this other podcast. There's a podcast that's connected to The Root, Henry Louis Gates, The Root, from The Washington Post. And I want to implore folks to go to these. I guess the latest one, actually. The latest one was dated August 30th. And it was, of course, talking about the festivities connected to the recent 50th anniversary of the March on Washington. And they just really went in on Obama that this was a shameful speech and that how dare he. He gives a different message to black people. I mean, they just went in that this is the worst speech that any president has ever given connected to black folk. I mean, this just went in. And I've heard other podcasts. I've seen other pieces, not unlike this Ebony Jet piece, where there's just a certain mindset that black folk are above criticism. No one is above being critiqued. But it's somehow they take it somewhere else. And I'm like, you're not looking, you're not talking about World Star Hip Hop, you're not talking about these reality shows, you're not talking about these court shows, you're not talking about how the media represents us, you're not talking about all this other stuff, but when somebody points out this stuff and points out some of the dysfunctionalism and actually points out the problem, we got to do something about those people. We got to deal with the messengers. But we never talk about the actual manifestation. We talk about the messenger. We got to do something about him. But Lil Wayne and the Minstrels, they stay. We get rid of Afro Nerd. We get rid of Larry Elder. But the clowns, they stay. They're fine. No one ever talks about removing them or removing their message. I don't know. I'm out of it, gentlemen. I don't get it. Catherine, anything else? I'm going to go to a quick groove, and then we'll go to the next story involving Mr. Holloway. This is another one. This is a cross-racial story, mind you. This is a cultural mindset, actually, that's not just black folk, but is concentrated with us. But on a macro level, it's out there for everybody. The next one, this next story is a whopper. Anything else, Captain?
Nothing else to add. Let's go to the next story.
All right. Well, let's go to a groove because we got about 26 minutes and then, you know, a groove, okay, and a discussion, and we do what we do. Q, I'm going to put you on hold real quick. You can come back on this one because this one's going to be another heavy-hitting issue. I'm pretty sure your blood will boil on this issue, too. It's crazy. It's about parenting. We're losing.
Okay.
Hold on.
Okay.
You'll just prepare yourself. All right. Folks, again, always giving you the best of Urban Alternative Groove, trying not to give you a minstrel show. I ran about this stuff weekly, the captain and myself, because it is what it is. I'm not making this stuff up. You're being spoon-fed minstrelsy, and unless we combat this, we're going to go into a feral state. It's already happening. I'm taking the captain's words, but we truly are going into a feral phase. All right, let's go to one of my favorite groups. I've played this before. This is Fishbone Crazy Glue. We'll be right back. Let's groove.
Now
Okay, we're back, folks. Once again, this is the Grindhouse edition of Afro Radio featuring Captain Kirk and myself, D-Bert. That was legendary rock group, a ska group, Fishbone Crazy Glue. I just can't get enough of urban alternative music, folks. I mean, I listen to everything, jazz, hip-hop, mostly classic and progressive hip-hop. But what we're hearing on the radio incessantly, this meme that's being created. When I'm driving around, Captain, I'm hearing what's coming out of some of these cars, out of the cars of black and white youth, where it's kill a nigga. I mean, you hear this as a diet. I mean, no one thinks that, or very few think that art is akin to a diet. What are you ingesting day in and day out? What does that do to your psyche to constantly hear just the N-word over and over again? It's the commercial strain of what's being put out there. You would think people would get arrested for doing this. It's crazy. Well, I mean, the type of what's happening to our youth and how it's really being very destructive. You think, we try our best. All right, the next story. Let me just go in on this thing. NFL great Brian Holloway. He played football in the early 80s, from around 81 to 88. He played for the New England Patriots and the L.A. Raiders. L.A. Raiders. And he's a man of note, a man of means. He has two homes, one in Florida and one in upstate New York. He finds out through his son. His son is like 19, 20 years old, so his son is a young person. He finds out through some kind of Facebook connection that there was a break-in at his New York home, and that these teenagers had tweeted photographs of themselves partying and destroying Mr. Holloway's home. When I mean destroying, I mean urinating on the carpets, destroying the windows, destroying the windows and graffiti in the living room. I mean, just completely making a mess of this gentleman's property. So the insanity of today's youth, of some of today's youth, because there are youth that we talk about on the Blue Area and during the anecdote that are doing what they're supposed to be doing. We have youth that are being inducted into Mensa and that are going to school many years before their time. So going to college, I'd say, before their time. So we're not to land-based all youth, but there's a segment out there, black and white, brown, yellow, that are completely off the map. So this whole mentality of self-incrimination, I don't get it. I think they're delusional. They're living in such a virtual reality that they don't realize that, hey, what I'm doing is actually illegal and a crime. So they tweet out photographs of themselves partying in Mr. Holloway's home, trespassing upwards of 200 to 300 kids. Now, they already put themselves out there between the tweets and the Facebook. They did that. In order for him to find out who the perpetrators were, he had to tweet out some information based on what he received, what they put out there themselves. They identified themselves. Would you believe that he, Mr. Holloway, the victim, he's getting threats from some of the parents of these hooligans because he should not have tweeted out their information because it might screw up their chances for going to college. So the parents are threatening Holloway, threatening to sue him, and threatening him bodily harm because he was victimized in his own home. Now, I don't know what the hell this is. Where are we going? Where's the culture going? Captain, I want you to weigh in on this. Can you believe that now the parents, now old school parents would have laid waste on these youth. These kids would have been grounded for Lord knows how long. They would have had to get
some kind of employment, they would have had to recompense Mr. Holloway. Why aren't they doing that?
So
what's the deal here?
Yeah, oh, you see.
That?
Yeah, well. Is that me? Well, that's not me.
Am I
clean?
Is that you?
Is that you, Q?
Q. All
right.
All right, I'll put him on hold. All right. All right.
Well, the first thing, I'm not sure to be absolute pertaining to the law, but I believe once they tweeted out they were at this party, it becomes the property of public domain at that given point. So I don't really think he's doing anything wrong from any standpoint. So they're being highly emotional pertaining to the parents now, pertaining to the parents, as far as their lawsuits. It doesn't have any validity as far as I'm concerned. I'm not totally sure on the law, but I think that's public domain now because they incriminated themselves at that given point. Now, back to the stupid, ignorant, gormless parents. Now, what we have to remember coming up in our time, you had a different parent. You didn't have all this computer age stuff. And this is something that's a stick with me to a certain extent. I think the computer at this point in time, circa 2013, is actually not so much an aid anymore. It's making people stupid, just plain and stupid. That's where their true mind is running, even from the parent standpoint. The whole culture is just going down the tank, down the tubes. Your kids were wrong. Your kids are wrong. You're lucky they all didn't get arrested. You're talking about, messing up their chances going to college. They should not have been there in the first place. They're trespassing. And then they self-incriminated themselves. How intelligent are you? You're about as intelligent as a fish, but maybe the fish is more intelligent at this given point than these parents. I just don't get it. I just don't get it. I just don't get it. You know? And I also think, and of course you will elaborate a little bit more on that, he was also a bit too nice. And I'll leave that aspect to you because there's more with the article. So back over to you, Seraph on Earth.
Yeah, and maybe there is an issue with him being too nice. I mean, listen, he sustained about $20,000 worth of damage. But the fact that you have strangers, that's just a violation. A violation, it makes you feel as if you're nothing. But your home is your castle. This man, he made a pretty good living. He has a nice home. But you feel like it's within your right to trespass and to just graffiti, like you don't exist. Like your property is not your property. And it is an attitude that's taking place where people have become feral, are becoming feral, and they could care less about you. You know, the last segment during the comic shop, we spoke about this Grand Theft Auto game, this video game, where a young man of color, who is mentally challenged in Florida, that, you know, he is to be admired on one level because he worked, I believe, at a Home Depot, saved up enough money, maybe once every 2 or 3 weeks he puts away $10 to buy this video game that he wanted to get. He buys the video game, a couple of color, male and female, married allegedly, they beat him up and rob him of his video game once he gets out of the GameStop. I mean, and then there's talk that, well, they had intended for it to be a white person, as if that would have been any better. But the fact that people are so callous and they don't realize what they're doing is wrong. It's wrong to rob from anyone. This is a hardworking young man, has difficulties, has challenges, but he's persevering. He is to be admired for that. At least allow him to have one moment in time where he can enjoy himself to have a damn video game, and they will not allow that. They think it's okay. There's this lack, this sociopath lifestyle. We're becoming a nation of sociopaths, and like the captain said, it might be tied into our technology partially, because parents tweet their children or text message their children. The Oracle calls me. But then, you know, we're old school, if you want to use that term, although I think it's a pejorative. Old school folks still use the phone for what it's intended to be. These are smartphones, and no one calls anyone. They text. And that text, the texting of people, it is a breakdown in the emotional connection. And this ties in with children or young, I can't call them children, young men and women breaking into a home and then Facebooking what they're doing, defaming or defacing this person's property without a thought, and then they're equally disconnected parents coming to their assistance. See, now they're the co-conspirators because this is evidently there's failed parenting going on, middle class failed parenting. So you're seeing failed parenting, and the parents are the cheerleaders as opposed to the disciplinarians. Where's the discipline? The child or the young person is the one that ruined their chances at college, not Mr. Holloway. I'm out of it. Let's go back to Q. I think Q might have had some difficulties. Q, are you there?
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I thought you had me on mute on your board there, so I have my phone on unmute.
Yeah.
But you know, this story with the kids reminds me of a story that you brought to light on your show maybe 3 years ago about a father who encouraged or participated with his son in the beating up of a parking lot attendant because he thought the parking lot attendant had stolen a camera or something out of
a cologne.
Two years ago.
Ridiculous. Doesn't even matter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the captain is onto something when he says part of this has to do with technology. But you know what I think it mostly is? I think it has to do with people, the people who have attacked Don Lemon, the woman who wrote this article, it's people like that, the enablers, that are causing our communities to decline to a certain degree. Because, you could talk about racism all you want, but if you are saying that we cannot – police ourselves because it won't uplift us, then that's what you need to look at. That's what you need to look at is why our kids are running rampant across the on the streets. Because parenting, black parenting was a hugely, vastly different thing back in the 50s, 60s, 70s. It started to drop off in the 80s, 90s, and now where we are today. So that's who I look at. That's what I look at. It's these not apologists, but it's these enablers is the term I'm going to use, that is causing our morals in our community to further and further decline.
Yeah, I could have said it any better than that, Q. I mean, it is what it is. It's very blatant. I'm just curious as to why we're seeing folks like this young lady in the Ebony article, because I'm connecting it all together. How, you know, it's evident that we're seeing a manifestation of this failure. We're seeing it now. Mr. Holloway, we're seeing what happened to his home. Up to 300 kids felt it was okay to trespass on this man's property and not only to get into the house, but to also to deface it, to urinate on this man's carpet. And then when the parents, who you would expect would be going apes, I'm censoring myself, that would be going apes, instead of doing that, they're contacting the attorneys and threatening Mr. Holloway with suits and bodily harm. So all he did was exist. All Mr. Holloway did was just exist. And what he gets for his troubles, lawsuits and threats of bodily harm and a house that has urine in it. And this should be a bigger story, actually, gentlemen. It should be a bigger story because it really, I don't know. We have, Captain, how many minutes do we have? We have about 6 minutes remaining. Two quick things I want to mention. I'll just try to throw it out there. They're kind of connected somewhat. Julie Chen, CBS The Talk, or The Talk and Big Brother, also married to Mel Karmazin. Not Mel Karmazin, I'm sorry. Les Moonves, from CBS. She admitted that she had plastic surgery. And I'm inclined to think that might be the Asian version of, although less, slightly the Asian version of her colleague, Cheryl Underwood, with her stating that the reason why she had this plastic surgery is because in order for her to be in the news business, someone told her she's too Asian-looking for Western audiences. So she went ahead, based on this one person's opinion, to get some work done. And, you know, my thinking is, listen, you can get work done for your own personal reasons. I'm not comfortable with someone telling you that you need to be less Asian. She's a very attractive woman to me. I think she's attractive. But this also calls into, would she even be married to Les Moonves? You know, I mean, this is almost like anyone of color, anyone of ethnicity. This whole deal of being not who you are, that you have to make these changes physically to be acceptable. That's a bit much. Another side story on this, because we got time constraints are really out there. Mr. C, I don't have the clip of him. Kath, you know Mr. C? I believe he was.
Absolutely.
But now he's a Hot 97 DJ, but he's more legendary because of affiliation with Big Daddy Kane. Is that correct?
Yep. And Biggie Smalls.
Yeah, Biggie Smalls. This guy has a penchant for the ladies that have a little extra. And that's been out there for a minute with him being caught with tranny prostitutes. But now he was on air, I guess kind of coming out, sort of, but he said he's not gay, but he has this issue, he's married. Captain, both people are making revelations based on nonsense. What is this? Is this more of the same of our culture just turning into dust?
Yep. That's absolutely exactly what it is. The coming out phase, where who cares if you're heterosexual or if you're gay or what have you? That's your business at the end of the day. That's your business at the end of the day. As I always said, the military, that was genius. Don't ask, don't tell. That's your business. You know, that's it. I don't care what you are. Can you do the job? Can you compete? That's it. Can you do the job? Can you compete? Forget about everything else. It's irrelevant. But now we're in our age. This is what we do. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I guess I just take issue when these – less about Julie Chen, but more about Mr. C, in the sense that I was unaware that he actually had a full family. He has a wife at home, wife and children, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes.
So what does she do? What is this? This is even weirder than the gay issue. Not that gay is necessarily weird, but it's even – if you're going to say gayness is weird – if you're going to say that, I'm not. This is even a different predilection than that. This is men with goatees and wigs performing acts. I find that disturbing.
Okay.
What is that?
You're entitled to that, but at the end of the day, that's between him and his wife, though. It's not that, you don't have to put me in that. I'm not concerned with your business. That's between you and your wife. You two go deal with that. The captain doesn't need to deal with that. That's not my job. It's not my job. I don't need to hear that. You go work that out with your wife. You got issues. You got underlying issues. That's what you like. That's your business. Leave me out of it. That's all I'm saying. That's it.
I don't know. I'm beginning to think differently about this whole DL business. You know, there's a young man that wrote a book years ago that was an Oprah to talk about the download culture. And yes. I guess this represents that in some respect. And I'll make this confession, Captain, that makes it scary.
Confession.
No, well, on a personal level.
Okay.
I was dating a young lady that admitted to me that she knew Mr. C and that Mr. C was trying to rap to her. Now, if Mr. C, having this lifestyle, was having relations with a young lady I was dating, he's putting me in his weird cipher. So this is why I think about this stuff that gets even crazier. You might as well, I might as well just stay indoors, Captain. This is what I mean, that his problems being unaccounted for affect a community. That's why this becomes serious. It affects a community, his weirdness. I'm just saying. And crying on air is not cool. All right, folks. That's my admission.
All right.
All right. We'll be back on Wednesday, folks. It's always been a pleasure. Q, continue supporting us. We appreciate it. More information to come down. It is what it is. Just try to keep your head up. Going out, this is Michelle Indegio-Cello, Dirty World. What a way to go out. Dirty World. See you on Wednesday.
Wow.
Pursuit of happiness has led to clutter.